This is Something to Carp About, the podcast that brings Carpinteria, California to you. I'm your host, Dennis Mitchell, and together we'll explore the town's attractions and issues. Welcome back to the podcast. We're returning after taking most of 2023 off with a new series of conversations about one of California's last great beach towns. We'll pick up where we left off. The last podcast we posted featured former Carpinteria Mayor Wade Nomura, and we get back into the city and how it's run with another former mayor and city council member, Greg Carty. Let's start at the beginning, Greg. Tell us about yourself and your relationship with Carpinteria.
Well, I went to Cantilino School as my elementary school all the way from first grade to sixth grade. It's interesting, my first grade classroom was my daughter's kindergarten classroom many years later. I went to seventh grade where the high school is now. There was one wing there. And there was a big walnut grove right next to the high school there. And that was the first Van Wingerden family to come to Carpinteria. And they aren't related to the Van Wingerdens that are here now, which
really?
Is interesting.
Wow.
They moved back to Minnesota or somewhere, and they were into ornamental grape growing. And Ari Van Wingerden was one of my best friends in seventh grade. Then that was the first year to use the old high school as junior high, we called it back then. And then I went back to the high school and all the way through high school. But between my junior and senior year, my brother and I built a home for my grandparents in Conch Loma. And my dad got me going on construction. I graduated from high school and in 75, I believe, I got my contractor's license. And I've been doing that ever since. Did a lot of custom carpentry for actors and fairly big jobs, 5,000-6,000 square foot, had employees. And now I'm a one-man show. My father's superintendent of Carp Schools for almost 30 years.
I see.
There were seven kids in my family. I used to have three brothers. Now I only have one. My oldest brother was killed in a hunting accident by one of his friends in Summerlin.
Oh, man.
It was out in the sticks in those days. You know, the back roads there were out, you know.
It was extremely rural.
Even Conch Loma. You know, down at Jelly Bowl, you know, there were houses there. There was three houses on the cliff and the house right when you go over the railroad tracks. And then multiple houses down further, that was 4th Street. It was a city street. Or it wasn't city at the time, but actually part of it was. But you go to Tar Pits Park, talking about being rural again. It, you know, hobo houses and snakes and lizards and hawks and a lot more than there are now. And then age 18 to 25, I don't tell a whole lot of people this, but I rode the freight trains around the United States. And I went to maybe, 25, 30. I haven't counted them all the way. 30 different states.
Wow, man.
Several times in the winter and the summer. I made it as far as New Orleans. Went through all the upper states, Montana, Utah, and all over the place. I didn't take any pictures, so it's all just memories to me.
Wow.
And it's interesting because there was ghost towns back then. And we used to get off the train and there was nobody in these towns.
Yeah, there was a train stop, but no town.
Yeah, but you had to be careful. If you got too far away from the tracks, you couldn't get back and you'd be out there for who knows how long. And one buddy I was riding with one time was collecting bottles, old bottles, really, really nice ones. And I go, you're never going to get those home. And eventually he never got them home. But and I traveled quite a bit. Been to Finland several times, and I'm planning another trip there right now. My mother's Finnish.
Oh, I see. Well, my son's girlfriend happens to be from Finland as well. She's from Helsinki. And she's headed there as we speak to spend the holidays.
I'll be there in June.
Oh, very cool. All right. Great time of year to be there.
Yeah, it doesn't get dark.
And what a wonderful, peaceful, great place Finland is.
You know, I talked about Carpinteria. You know, it just was a a child's dream to grow up in a place like Carpinteria.
Now, were you born here?
I was not born here, actually. I was 4 years old.
Oh,
my sisters were born here.
Okay.
But my dad got the job as superintendent. He, believe it or not, he was vice principal of Englewood High School.
Oh, wow.
And he was barely 30 years old, six kids, and superintendent of Carp Schools.
That's amazing. That's amazing. You know, this seems to be the kind of town that lends itself to that, though. Young talent gets recognized here. I've seen. You're one of the people I've wanted to talk to the most about the city's colorful past. You're a builder. You helped build this town. So aside from the incorporation in 1965, what do you see as the major milestones for Carpinteria? Where were the big, big changes? What were the big significant changes where you could tell the future was going to be different from that point on? I mean, I've heard about, you know, when the greenhouses came, and that was a change. So can you give us kind of how you see that history unfolding?
Yeah, well, you look at the freeway right now, that's a big project.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but in 1958, they just finished the old freeway, which was a new freeway through Carpinteria, and it divided Carpinteria in half. So that was just opening when I was 4 or 5 years old, you know, and it's probably the biggest change that ever happened to Carpinteria, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then incorporating was a, you know, you said besides that, but that was actually a big change for Carpinteria. We had our own police department, and everybody at City Hall pretty much lived here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the big change now is staff and pretty much a lot of City Hall, they're actually from somewhere else now. Everybody's from somewhere else, but you know, a shorter term here. But and then see what else. The state park taking over, condemning the houses on 4th Street, you know, through Tar Pits Park to the end, because we used to be able to drive to Jelly Bowl, and that was a cul-de-sac, and you could park there and look at the surf. And
I've always wondered about the history of how that 4th Street situation evolved.
Yeah, it all started with 69 floods with the bridge being washed out. The city couldn't afford to replace the bridge over the creek, so the state kind of took it over. But we're in a way, we're lucky it is a state park, because it would probably be houses,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
if the state park weren't there. And then, you know, we used to have a fishing pier down past the oil pier that's there now.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really, it was an old oil pier, but the dads, it was condemned. They put wire up, and the dads went down there and patched the deck all up because, you know, it was needed repair. And then for years, we had a fishing pier and great fishing. And then the things that we miss in Carp, you know, like Reggie's Bait and Tackle on Palm. You know, anybody that's been here for a while knows Reggie's Bait and Tackle shop. He had a club, and he claimed that he had more members than any other club in the world.
Wow.
And
that's saying
I have my card, and it has a number on it, but I can't read it, so I don't know what number I am. And he would shake your hand and give you a fish grabs a hold and takes off shake, and you're a member of his club. But I just to be able to grow up in Carpinteria and on Carpenter Avenue, Casitas Pass.
Yeah.
Turning on Casitas Pass, you were driving off into the yonder. It was a little two lane road with no sidewalks on each side, nothing but orchards and a couple of ranch houses.
So the development of the shopping center obviously was a pretty big change too.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the Shepherd's Plaza, there was a little bit of controversy. There were several people in Carpinteria that wanted that to be a park.
I see.
And somehow that, you know, shopping center won.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense having a park like that across from the middle school. It was high school at the time.
Yeah, and you know, if I may, a fishing pier makes total sense.
Yeah.
That seems like something that would fit so well here. It's a shame that had to go away, I guess.
Yeah, but the things you have to do and the hoops to jump through now, you wouldn't have a pier for 10, 20 years, even if you started the ball rolling now.
Right,
so.
Right.
But changes, a lot of them. You know, we had one blinking stop sign
at
Linden and Carp Avenue. And I once in a while, I ride the bus to school, but I usually rode my Stingray.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of shortcuts. You get to Catalina School pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the school got new buses.
Mm-hmm.
And at Mills Drugs there on the corner, the bus couldn't make the turn in one turn. They had to back up and do it again. That's how narrow Lincoln Avenue every day until they Mills was gone, and the old bank was closer to the street too. It wasn't always Bank of America. Security Pacific.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's look in broader terms here. You know, I've heard that CARP was more of a roadside stop in those days, the days that you're describing, the 60s.
Yeah.
Kind of rough around the edges even.
Do you know why that's so?
Please.
Because it's where, if you're driving from Los Angeles to San Francisco, you had to stop and get gas in Carpinteria, mm-hmm. or Santa Claus. I think Carpinteria had 12 or 13 gas stations.
No kidding.
And Santa Claus had maybe 4 or 5.
Wow.
And you know, the highway went right through Carpinteria.
Yeah, yeah.
And
what my question was going to be, though, you know, that given that status that you can just picture, how did we evolve into this idyllic paradise that's like Mayberry RFD now?
Well,
I mean, we've maintained that.
Yeah, well, the coolest thing is the people that have moved here, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. know why they moved here for that reason.
Right.
And they're still moving here for that reason, but it's changing a little bit right now. It's more a lot of wealth moving in, mm-hmm. Second homes, and that's kind of not a positive thing for Carpinteria, I don't think. Some mm-hmm. people think it is. You know, their property, they're going through the roof of what they sell for rents, but. I'd rather people buy a house for a home rather than an investment. You get right. people flipping them, and that kind of stuff's, you know, not good for CARP.
Well, real estate and home ownership, the very nature of those things has changed in the way that you've said. And yeah, it's hard to see that as good if you're not in that club.
Yeah.
You know, I'm new to the game. I moved here in 21, but from my news background, I could sense the sea change here in CARP when the voting districts were set up.
Oh.
How much do you feel that the dynamic has changed for getting things done since that happened, and we're not on at large voting like we
yeah.
were?
Well, I didn't like the idea of going to districts to start with, and I expressed that early on, and I still don't like it, and I wish there was some way of changing it and going back. It doesn't make sense that, you know, people in a district, a couple hundred votes to a couple hundred votes, and there's 14,000, 15,000 people in Carpinteria.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me, because I always, when I was on council, I was on council for 16 years. Mm-hmm. And before that, I was on Architecture Review Board for 12 years. And I really enjoyed that. But I strive to represent the whole community, no matter who you were. And if I were on there now, I still would.
Yeah. Well, that's the ideal, you know, that our council members are all looking out for the entire community. But, you know, lines are lines.
Yeah.
Boundaries are boundaries.
We're too small of a community for districts. You know, okay. They make sense in a bigger city, but not in Carpinteria.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the two controversial development projects, the Hotel at the Bluffs and the Surfliner Inn, both of which seem to involve an undercurrent of citizens who don't want to see either project built against town officials and developers who think they'll do us a lot of good. Would you care to give us your idea of the pluses and minuses of each?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Bluff project first.
Okay.
That's where Tea Time is. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I hear comments that, you know, let's preserve our bluffs, you know. And first thing you have to realize that they aren't really our bluffs. They're privately owned. And there's a lot of property rights that come along with that. And we have to be real, real careful in Carpinteria to say no to a proposal until we really know what's involved with it. Because we easily could get a developer that's attorney-backed mm-hmm. and get something that we really don't want in the future. So we need to really weigh if is it really that bad, or is it good, or what's in it for the community?
And, yeah, I hear comparisons to the Bacara along the lines of what you just said. It's like if they're money backed and go around the people, you know.
Any development in Carpinteria, I think the city council and everybody involved, really, even the citizens, need to really look at it closely and base it on its merit and get something that would be good for the community rather than possibly something that would ruin our community.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that want to buy the bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what would the figure be? $20 million?
At this point.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that'd be difficult to raise. The best thing that could happen to carp that it stays open space.
Sure.
But there is, how many acres of open space with the proposed project? And that doesn't mean what it'll be if it got approved. It may get, you know, more open space. And, you know, it's something for the people of Carpinteria to figure out here.
Yeah, yeah. When I was doing news up at K-Tide, I got here pretty much in line in the time frame where that section of the bluffs was preserved. The money came up and it was bought to be preserved. Mm-hmm. I was deeply inspired by that. I thought that was really cool that a community would do such a thing. So now you've got kind of a flashpoint with the Tee Time Golf Course. Every time you drive by there, you try to imagine what that would look like. So,
yeah. But is the community using it right now?
A guy is using it for his driving range.
Yeah, and then, you know, garden on the other side. It was a nursery for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That whole area there was my stomping ground as a kid, you know, and I love that area all the way, you know. Before that, when 7-Up Bottling Company was the first company to come, the first building past Viola Fields, they were the first. Oh, actually, I take that back. Infrared Industries was out there first. And then 7-Up came, and they employed a lot of Carpinterians.
Mm-hmm.
We're so lucky to have that. You know, Carpinteria, we have over 100 acres of open space, not even counting the marsh.
Yeah.
The marsh isn't really in the city limits. But and then we have the beach. So we're fortunate to have what we have now, and it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was that sense of priority that they would actually, you know, pony up the money, which was significantly less than what we're talking about now, but it's still to use it for that purpose.
Yeah, I just thought
that spoke to the character of the town. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, the oil company, there was a Chevron Land Development Company. That's what it said on the no trespassing signs all through the bluffs, because they didn't want you over there. But they actually worked with the citizens of Carpinteria and agreed to sell it. And the price was fair, and community raised it. And, yeah, it's pretty awesome, like you say.
It really is. And so we'll just keep a curious eye on what happens with that.
And then you mentioned the hotel.
Yeah.
Well, if you were planning a city, I think you would probably put a hotel in your downtown. You know, and the other new projects we're seeing going on Linden Avenue and the 700 block and the Palms.
Right.
And stuff.
I was going to ask you about that.
Well, I don't think locals are going to be enough to support it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the state park, which brings a lot of people. They've changed the way they come to Carpinteria, too. They didn't used to go into town, and they used to bring everything with them.
Right.
But now they're going out to dinner and going in the shops and... but I think a large part of the 700 block is going to be tourist-driven.
Yeah, I'm the most curious of all of that. I don't even know the name of that thing. And have you seen
either.
It? Yeah, and I've actually tried to find out.
It's actually designed pretty nice.
Oh, I'm liking what I'm seeing as it goes up.
Yeah, and, it's going to have a rooftop bar. And
I think downtown merchants are eagerly looking forward to it because it's just that many more people in the mix. You know?
And then the hotel... I think it needs some help as far as the design of it.
Yeah.
But
Proposition T didn't really give us the consensus we were looking for. It was, you know, the thing was weirdly worded. You had people voting no that thought they were voting on the hotel versa. And so I don't think it was like the clear-cut consensus that developers were hoping for. But here it is a year later, and we're really not hearing anything. They have to go before the Planning Commission, just like the Bluffs would have to, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well... Now it starts the planning process. You know, it could be denied in that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a believer that it should go through the planning process and let people speak their mind during that.
Well, I've got you here, and I did my podcast on it was kind of a farewell to the Palms kind of thing last year. So tell us your times at the Palms. What are your favorite Palm stories, Greg?
Well, the Palms, I remember the bar being over there where the potatoes and bread were. The bar used to be over there, and the corner was a beauty shop. And there were quite a few brawls in the Palms.
I've heard stories.
I have a friend that his family made all those. They look like stained glass, but they're all resin. He made all those way, way back for the Palms. And I remember Mom, which is Todd and Bill's grandmother, is it?
I don't know.
She
I know
pretty Todd much, Bill. She pretty much ran the Palms.
I see.
And then she lived over there in, what is it? Not Sandpiper? The mobile home park across from Santa Claus?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, Sandpiper. She lived over there, and I think she had the oldest trailer in there.
Hmm.
She sold it to Al Freck and his wife, and they just moved it out just recently.
Wow.
But she was there forever, and then, you know, it was all local employees. You know, a steak dinner was a couple bucks. There'll never be another Palms.
No, I don't think. You know, it's sad. I hear that repeatedly.
I wish that they Bill and Todd would have kept it, you know, going. But just with COVID and all that, having an open barbecue, and I don't know if it would be allowed anymore. But no, it's the reason a lot of people came to Carpinteria was because of the Palms.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I travel. I'd be on the other side of the world, and they go, yeah, the Palms is there.
Story after story. Yep, like I said, I did a whole podcast on it with Trish the Dish and everybody reminiscing. Stepping back to a little more complicated issue is the housing element. That has Carpinteria in the unenviable position of having to accommodate a whole lot of new residences that weren't there before. When you get to the core of this whole issue, we do have a housing crisis in California. This is one way of addressing it. But a lot of people feel like we're getting the short end of the stick on this.
Yeah. Well, I remember the forget his title, who used to come and talk to the city from the county. I forget where on housing in Carpinteria. And you know, the arena numbers, I guess, it ever going to level off? Hmm. Or is it just going to keep going? And they said it's just going to keep going.
Hmm.
And in Carpinteria, you could build 5,000 homes. You could build 10,000 homes. It still wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
So
the demand is there.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough question.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know really how to answer that.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Do you think the city is handling it in the correct way? Are we following the correct path in opposing it or at least wanting a fair shake?
Yeah, I think the city's on the right path. They got criticized for not getting it approved once or twice, I think. But that was more about the details mm-hmm. in it, not what, you know, changing it, really. It was more they wanted more information on the details that were already there. So as we grow, there's going to be more and more city issues. You know, it just like you get sidewalks everywhere. And,
yeah.
You know, I kind of liked it when we didn't have all that stuff. And, you know, my friend's dad, Mayor, Rob Mayer, you know Rob Mayer?
I believe I've met him somewhere along the line.
His father was the only sheriff back when I was
a kid. Oh, okay.
But, you know, back in those days, if you had an issue, you could phone someone up and get a friend to take care of it.
Yeah.
But today it's like, you know, to take care of something, it's months or whatever, you know.
Yeah, lots more hoops to jump through. All of these questions are really one question I've been dragging out on purpose, and that question is, how do you see the future of Carpinteria?
We're always going to have a bright future. Carpinteria is always going to be a special place. It'll be different. You know, and it's kind of up to the next generation. I have one daughter that's going to be 40 and one's 35, and they're all great kids. All their friends are great. I mean, it's just like, that's our future, and they're going to start speaking up pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And they care about Carpinteria, and I think that we need to, you know, when there is a project, just make sure the architect is the right one for the job. Things look cool. It's just, like I say, we're always going to be a special place. There's no, I don't even have a concern. We're always going to be, but there'll be issues, hurdles, and the school's issue kind of scares me.
Mm-hmm. That enrollment is so low?
Enrollment, it's below 2,000.
I know, unreal. The newest figures were kind of a shock to a lot of people.
Yeah, and what do you do about that? It seems like the funding should go down if the...
I suppose that would be an...
It's gone down drastically.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get a tour of the... I'm in Rotary now. I'm going to get a tour of the high school culinary department this Thursday.
Neat.
And, you know, and I just had my 50th high school reunion.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And we got a tour of the high school. And it's funny, the principal, Cornejo, I graduated in 72 and he was born in 72.
Wow.
When he gave us the tour, somebody asked him, how old are you? And he said, I was born in 72. But I was really impressed with the school. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you haven't been to the school and seen the certain areas like construction, you know, it's out the window, you know, there's none of that anymore. It's all tech stuff. And, mm-hmm. and but it's ag. I think 40% of the kids are in FFA.
Right. Right.
Which that's I like that.
It says a lot about our area. Will there ever be peace in the valley with the cannabis issue, with the cannabis farmers and the and the little group that hates the smell?
I hope so, to put it that way. I don't know if it's going to be just a temporary thing growing cannabis here, or if it's going to be here for the long haul. And, you know, what happens with those greenhouses, you know, they went from flower to cannabis and most of them are concrete already. You know, the floors are concrete, but it wouldn't take much to take them out and build houses. And that's a fear of a lot of Carpenterians. You know, it's with the project off of Baylor there.
Right.
What's the name of it?
All I know is it's a project off of Baylor.
Yeah, I'm really against that because the one that benefits the most on that project, they're partnering with a developer, a contractor, mm-hmm. and when that job's completed, it gets divided, and the contractor gets a large portion of that project.
Oh, and it's completely out of our hands because it's on county land.
Yeah, and it involves all our infrastructure, our fire department, our water, our police, everything. Yeah. And eventually, it'll have to be incorporated into the city. And the county gets all the arena numbers. I don't know about all of them. They're trying to work that out. I don't know. It was a big controversy when I was on council, and they pretty much told me to get out of the room one day.
Really?
They didn't want to have. They didn't want to hear what I had to say.
Wow.
So they know how I feel about that project.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I've heard that echoed many times around town. Actually, I hear very, very little support. I mean, I, you know, you hear people on the street, and you hear the percentage of comment you hear on one side of that. I don't hear any support for that whatsoever locally.
Yeah, well, I'll bring up, I don't like to say anything bad about anybody, but I was in conversation with Doss Williams.
Yes.
And I ended the conversation by saying, he said, you guys in Carpenteria, as far as housing, you guys need to get with it. Mm-hmm. And I said, whatever you do, don't muck up Carpenteria. And that was the end of the conversation.
Okay. Got it, man. You have any future political aspirations?
Yeah, I'd like to run again. I think I was unfairly treated the last election.
Yeah.
And
back to the districting thing again.
Yes.
And that's where I could see it kind of unfolding and leaving kind of a stain.
Well, there was attacks on my family. Ooh. Things said about my family, about me. Mm. And when it came to campaigning, the absentee ballots were already turned in. And and I don't know if you know that my opponent, he had almost all his votes from those votes.
I see. No, I didn't know that.
I used to work well with our mayor, now he has a hard time looking at me when we're talking.
Well, props to you for, you know, persevering and maybe even wanting to get back in the loop.
But the sad part about it, Dennis, is that I have to wait 3 more years.
Yeah.
Because of the districting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can only run once every 4 years.
Yeah. Well, I think the folks are aware that you're not going anywhere. And, 3 years, I don't know, the city's going to look quite a bit different in 3 years from now. We will have the fallout. Everything will be in place from the stuff we're talking about now for whatever platforms you will be running on.
Yeah.
It's safe to say.
Well, there'll be new things.
Yeah. Yeah, the coming issues.
Because I know that there's some property down in the beach neighborhood that they're looking into developing. It hasn't been turned in officially yet, but it's coming. I know that because I know.
Okay.
You know, it's 3 years away for me, and but you start campaigning almost a year ahead, so a year's already gone by.
Yeah. That's the nature of all election races, it seems like. As soon as the one is over, you're campaigning for the next one.
Yeah, so. I really enjoyed being on Carpenteria City Council.
I could tell.
And, you know, working with our city manager, Dave Derflinger, when I first got on there, you know, we used to laugh a lot more, you know, and then towards the end here, you know, with things got a lot more serious with the issues that were in, and we didn't do that as much at the end, which was sad, but,
that's interesting.
And then Michael Ramirez, the new city manager, I support 100%.
Yes.
It's, that was, probably a difficult choice for the council to make because there were a lot of people that wanted that position. And, I think a lot of it has to do with being around Dave for the amount of time he was at City Hall.
Right.
And I heard he has a place in Carpinteria now, so he doesn't live that 30 miles away.
Or yeah, and they even bent that rule. So, yeah, all good. All good. Michael's good people. We've had him in on shows here at the radio station.
You know, the interesting thing is I still get phone calls from people that have complaints or things to say about the city.
Yeah, think that you're the guy to go
I got a call the other night from somebody that a local guy has lived here his whole life. You know, his neighbor around the corner is parking their trailer in front of his house, and it's been there for 3 days. You know, what can I do to help
him? And he calls you.
Yeah. And then another guy phoned me that his neighbor has wind chimes on the front porch, and it's outside their master bedroom. It's just funny, and I'm throughout the community. People still think I'm on council.
Yeah,
but some people come up and go, I'm sorry you didn't win. I voted for you, and they aren't even in my district.
Oh wow. So, you know, we have the one newspaper, and it only comes out once a week.
Yeah.
So maybe everybody doesn't see things as they happen, and there's your familiar face. Yeah. So yeah, that's amusing.
Yeah, it's funny. I saved all the old newspapers. My mom and dad got them delivered to the house, and the old Carpenter Heralds. I lent some to a guy that used to work at the city, but he never gave them back.
Oh, no.
But I have a lot. And to see some of the old pictures in their, like, tar pits.
Yeah. You and your wife, Jerry, are the current Carpenterians of the Year, and it's sure not hard to tell why that had to feel pretty good.
Yeah, that was unexpected. I was told that she was getting the award for the women's club, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, because I'm not a big fan of big events and stuff, and it takes a lot to get me to some of them, but she deserves it. You know, the best thing that ever happened to me is Jerry, you know, and she's the one that she's involved with, and her whole family.
She's a superwoman.
Yeah.
I've seen
Jerry, Mary Beth, and Mike, three in one family, Carpenterians of the Year.
Yeah.
And their mother and father easily could be Carpenterians of the Year. So that alone tells you something about their family.
Yeah, yeah. And like I say, about the priorities and the system for voting, you guys are a perfect choice. Everybody was surprised for a nanosecond. Just because it was like such a pleasant surprise that we didn't expect. So
yeah. Well, the other good thing about that whole awards banquet and ceremony is it's back to local Carpinteria.
I just heard that.
What is it, Carpinteria Alliance? What's it called? The group?
It's some association, Carpinteria something association.
But you know, they were a little bit. They didn't like a few of the things that happened the last couple of years,
right.
And it got not so local because it was always local. You'd have Curtis Lopez and.
Right.
And Terry Hickey, you know, announcing the, you know, the special awards, and the dignitaries would get up there and give there was none of that the last couple of years. And we're going to have all that again. And it's going to be a lovely evening for the community.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard it's back under local control, and that's just great news. Well, as Carpenterians go, it doesn't get any more real and genuine than Greg Carty, currently the co-Carpenterian of the Year. Whether you like it or not. And it's great to finally sit down and catch up with you. Best of luck in the future, and thank you.
You're very welcome, and my pleasure.
Carpinteria is a haven for artists of all kinds. The Linda Fairley Carpinteria Arts Center is a focal point for all those creative juices right in the heart of town. And the landscape also includes dozens of very talented musicians and bands. And I recently caught up with one, Omar Velasco.
Congratulations on the glowing write-up in Santa Barbara Independent. Gives us all a fresh look at what you're doing and what got you here. And for a lot of us, our first exposure to you. You're in show business. This is the kind of thing that never hurts.
Right. Yeah, no, they were very kind to... So speak to me. I spoke to a lovely gentleman called Sean, and he was really charitable with his write-up. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. I did too.
Yeah.
You know?
It was sweet. And yeah, I'm just happy to be back in my hometown after spending over a baker's dozen of years in L.A. And yeah, I feel like I can like exhale now a little bit.
Good deal.
Being back here.
Well, yeah. Tell us a little bit about your long and winding road that winds up back here at the South Coast.
Yeah, so I went to high school in Goleta at Dos Pueblos High School. And then coming out of that, I went to Santa Barbara City College, and I was an avid basketball player. I played at the college, and that's where I sort of decided to dedicate myself to music as a career. I did the music program there, and all during that time, I was in bands, and I started my own projects. And several projects and bands later, I joined a group an artist in L.A., so that kind of forced me to move to L.A.
because
mm-hmm. It was just too much of a commute. And then, I spent the next 12, 13 years there. It was like my sort of like university like doctorate program, going there and just being around the talent and the
school of life.
Yeah, and you know, I think it was kind of an epicenter of music, or it has been over the past few years, and I felt very fortunate to be there and just involved with all those the cool cats.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
You were in a band called Amo Amo.
That was a project that was started, I want to say 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of grew out of a band that I had myself. It was under my own name, and it morphed into this new band that was kind of a dancey, funky band that was really fun and really a wonderful band, and I enjoyed it very much. And that we worked with a friend of mine, Jim James, who produced that album. And that kind of set us on a trajectory that was, really exciting. And we had some really fun tours. And just about a year and a half ago, I decided to leave that group. So that's where I'm at now, you know, doing my own thing.
Well, what a whirlwind, though, to wind up in L.A. What was the point at which you went, my God, I'm pretty good at this, and this is working out?
Yeah. I'm still trying to, like, you know, make, you know, see if that's the case. No, music for me, it came relatively easily from my earliest age. And I had a relationship with it from the very beginning, and I've always had a good ear, you know, and in some ways it just felt like, why would I do anything else? It kind of felt like it's where my gifts lay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it would be, I mean, not to mention the fact that I really love it. And I can't see myself doing anything else. I mean, I've pondered it, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought about other avenues, and they always kind of followed with a sense of like dread and, you know, like nausea. So I figure I better stay with what I'm good at, you know.
I see.
The musician, that trajectory is certainly, it's not a guaranteed path. But that's okay. That's okay with me. I'm lucky enough to have the support and the opportunities to continue. And as long as I have those, I feel like I will.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah. What were your musical influences? You said you're into sports and stuff as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
So what music were you listening to that thought, you know, that made you think you could make the jump?
Oh my gosh, that's an interesting question, because, you know, as most people, I'm sure there's been so many chapters of music that has inspired me or that I found compelling. I think if I had to boil it down to like a few that rise to the top of my Rushmore would be like Stevie Wonder, probably a Brazilian artist named Milton Nascimento,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Leonard Cohen, and there's a Cuban troubadour Silvio Rodriguez. That was a big part of my upbringing. So that's taking my whole life into account, you mm-hmm. know. Like mm-hmm. I've had, there's been times where I've been obsessed with Tupac or like Jimi Hendrix, or obviously depending on which chapter you're asking about, like it would change dramatically.
Right. Well, I meant those influences that have wound up in your music.
Oh, yeah, the ones I mentioned.
Okay.
I would say the ones I mentioned, certainly Bob Dylan and a lot of folk, mm-hmm. music, Nick Drake and Cat Stevens. There are some contemporary artists that I admire and I love, but mostly my inspiration comes from the past.
Okay. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Like a lot of music, yours deals with personal issues, sometimes personal politics. What motivates you to write and perform? Why do you want to do this?
Oh, wow. So many great questions. What motivates me to want to write? I think I put it this way. I was recently watching an interview with Leonard Cohen where he's asked a similar question. And his answer was one that it was like he nailed it so succinctly, and that's been on my mind ever since, which is the reason for writing for me, which is different than performing. We'll get there. But the reason for writing for me is that somewhere in the process, the hope is that you uncover your self-respect. So I think what he means by that, or what I interpret that to be, is through the work of exploring your internal world in the process of writing, you try and polish or reveal something internal that you're proud of, that elicits a sense of self-respect, you know.
I see.
And I feel like that's the process of work for me, like work in the craft. I think that's what I boil it down to.
I never heard it put that way. It's more, what you just said also could be you're trying to uncover something sad. You're trying to uncover something revelatory or whatever. Self-respect. Yeah. I never heard it put that way.
Right, because the subject matter is almost irrelevant to the feeling of gratification. If a song is worthy of yours, if it can pass through the gauntlet of your own self-criticism, and whatever the subject matter is, if you express it in a way that you feel proud of, I suppose, mm-hmm. That's a really excellent feeling.
Yeah.
And I think it's a formative feeling too. In a less esoteric way, it's this, I would relate it to any kind of craftsman, a carpenter, the feeling of using their hands to build a chair that they think is great. That's a really enlivening feeling.
Right.
And I think ultimately that's the driver for me to write. And then hopefully through the process, there's all the positive effects, side effects would be processing emotion, relatability, some kind of revelatory experience, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and then in terms of performing for me is, I thought a lot about this, and I think it's the same reason why I loved playing basketball so much. And there's a similar quality in that they both, take place on a kind of stage,
right?
Which is a kind of life concentrate, in the sense that the stakes are higher, and therefore your presence, the presence of mind and the presence of being, has to, if you want it to be a successful performance, the more sort of present and simultaneously in the flow you are, sort of like a meditative state, really.
I think
is what it is.
Yeah.
And there's so few opportunities in my life for that. that like I crave it and I love it. And I love the dynamic and the exchange with the audience. Like
right.
It's really transcend. It can be a transcendent experience.
Right. Yeah. I love the parallel because both activities you can do on your own to get good at before you're ready to do it in front of people.
Indeed. Indeed. And in fact, you should.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, yeah. Don't get on that stage.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
The new LP is called Like the Fruit Falls from the Tree. Give us an overview of what was in your head when you laid it out and how you feel about the results.
Oh, sure. It was a very, in some ways, tumultuous time in my life. A lot of change. A lot of, excused myself from a band that I'd put a lot of my time and energy and love into. Around the same time, my father passed away, and then just about a month later, my son was born. Rather, the other way around. My son was born, and my father passed.
Mm.
And you know, my experience of, like, both, you know, being so close to, like, the opposite ends of the spectrum of the human experience, you know, like, the birthing thing is its own kind of mystical intensity, and then obviously death is as well. And so it was just a really fertile time. Luckily, I had this outlet, you know, that I just gravitated towards, like, really fundamental songwriting. Just I really wasn't at all concerned with, like, the computer or the production or any kind of bells and whistles. I really felt like I needed to find just the essence of what I wanted to express, you know, and that was all pretty clear at that time, which I'm really grateful for.
It was
a really fruitful experience. And then subsequently, you know, I knew that the recording process should stay in that sort of fundamentals realm. And I really didn't want to overthink things. You know, I wanted to just trust the songs. And I'm happy with the results for sure.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you've brought your guitar.
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've got it on now. And you've got a new album out. So how about a tune?
Absolutely. I would love to play this song called Corazón de Niño, which is a song about the, you know, youthfulness of heart.
All and, right.
Yeah, and it goes like this.
Percibo en tu pecho ese mismo latido. mañanas y por la tarde el mezcal. Corriendo por las montañas te encuentras con la verdad. Corre como tarahumara, dejando atrás tu desdén. El camino nunca se acaba, hay que hacerse amigo de él. Dices que te sientes viejo, que miras de lejos a tu juventud, pero yo percibo en tu pecho ese mismo ritmo, corazón de niño.
Very, very nice. It's Corazón de Niño. We are with Omar Velasco talking about his life and career and his new album, Like the Fruit Falls from the Tree. What's the story behind the title?
What's the story? That's... So at some point during the pandemic of... I out of kind of boredom and also slash necessity, I took a job with a fruit tree company that was specializing in kind of like pruning and taking care of people's fruit trees in their yards.
I see.
And in LA, there's quite a bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
So spending time around the trees, that they kind of opened my eyes to a really wonderful, it's a kind of secret world. They're kind of host to an incredible biosphere,
mm-hmm,
that just is kind of teeming with life all around them, and you know they. They're just such generous beings, and
not looked at that way enough.
And not looked at that way. And yeah. In fact, like, as I was working amongst the canopies of these trees, like, I really got the sense that these are really truly beings,
mm-hmm,
and you know, with songs, in fact, and feelings and desires.
All right.
And so, I kind of the analogy for me was like, you know, maybe us as human beings can take a page out of a leaf from the tree. In the sense that, you know, life really is about kind of what fruits you bring to bear and the way that you offer them to the world around you. And so in some ways, like the songs on this record, they felt like they were just being dropped into my basket, you
okay
know? And so that's kind of the feeling I had as the songs were being written, and there was just a really sort of bountiful sense,
yeah,
you know.
Well, even the great songwriters we've all admired down through time will, mm-hmm, tell you a story of struggling and, mm-hmm, working and having to come up with this, and then others will say everything just flowed, everything just,
yeah.
And you were lucky enough to find yourself in that zone.
Yeah, and it certainly has not always been that way.
Right.
I've had to toil for those results, you know, for sure. And so that when I think of this album, I have a very kind of like humbled feeling about it, because it did feel like uncannily easy,
mm-hmm,
and sort of like I was gifted.
Yeah. I mean, to the point that maybe you stopped and went, wait, this is too easy.
Yeah.
Really?
No, I never had that sense. It all felt right. It felt like, because a lot of the toil aspect of me, for me, historically, has been in the lyric writing. It doesn't come quickly for,
mm-hmm,
me at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there was such a crystallization of feeling, of emotion, that it was leading the way in such a way that my mind wasn't necessarily getting in the way of the flow, which,
okay,
you know, like, is truly like the ideal way of creating for me.
Yeah.
And is not always available.
Right. You know? The brain gets in the way sometimes.
Oh yeah. Big time. Can't live without it.
Exactly. Yeah. When did you first pick up a guitar? When did that become your inclination?
Oh, that was a long time ago. I must have been maybe 9 or 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I started on the piano, but yeah, I had an older cousin that I admired quite a bit, and he was taking guitar lessons at the time, and I was like, "Ooh, I want to do that." And so, I was lucky enough to have we lived in Mexico at the time, and mm-hmm. there was a really fantastic teacher, the only really good teacher I've ever had. And so that laid the foundation, classical guitar laid the foundation.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Do you have any history with Carpinteria?
You know, I did play at that theater quite a few years ago. Before it was, I feel like it was under a different name.
It's had a few different names. Yeah. The most recent before that was the Plaza Playhouse Theater.
That's what it was.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
With some friends of mine that put on a concert, Polly and Steve, they were putting on concerts there. And so I had played there once before, and it always kind of like stuck in the back of my mind as like a really special little place.
And, it is. The town and the theater.
The town is really, really, like I said to you earlier, it's like truly one of the most beautiful and kind of, you know, secret and like just quaint little places. I always get a good feeling as I drive.
We want to brag about it, but we don't want everybody to find out about it.
Yeah.
So that's our conundrum here always.
Yeah. I haven't really given myself the license to really fully dedicate to my own solo music.
Mm-hmm.
And now finally I feel like I ought to, and I really want to. So
great.
That's my focus. You know, there's always a bunch of other stuff that I'm doing. I'm helping put on a festival that's going to happen in May up in Buellton. And continue down the musical path, really.
All right. You know, it just sounds like you're in the best zone possible for that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like anything else, it ebbs and flows. Like, I'd always like to be writing more than I am, but, you know, you can't rush that stuff.
No, yeah, it's there or it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I guess you show up. I had this funny thought, like, I don't know if you're like a Lord of the Rings fan.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, good.
not devout with the books and all that stuff, but the movies were fabulous.
Yeah, sure. Yes. So, like, there's this, this is kind of a strange analogy, but, like, if, like, you know, music and, like, good fortune in music is, like, you know, the eye of Sauron.
Looking down on us.
Resting on the person.
Okay.
Right? It's, like, then putting on the ring is, like, showing up to write a song. Right? So, the more you do that, the more likely you are of being fortunate in music.
Yeah.
Right? And it's kind of a convoluted
analogy, no, it's like having a connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're touching base.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're just giving like inspiration a chance to maybe visit you, you know? And
that's, I love the way you put that. That's just great. It really is. How about another tune?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, so this one's called a Forgiveness Song. Forgiveness Song. And
go. And this is on the new album, too?
This is on the new album.
Okay.
Yeah. I looked into my heart. It didn't hurt no I wanted to tell you that I'm moving on. I wanted to write you a forgiveness song, something to help move everything along. I hope you forgive me. Forgiveness song. I woke up this morning and it hit my chest. I'm ready to move on from the bitterness. I'm not gonna hold on
Something to Carp About is now available wherever you get your podcasts, including Podomatic, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. We're sponsored by Pacific Prairie Productions, specializing in radio syndication and podcast production. Call 805-500-3144. Talk to you next time. I'm Dennis Mitchell.